A Christian perspective on sex is our topic. To quote Veritas Communications, sexual values in today's culture are changing so quickly that the church is seen as increasingly out of touch. Younger generations no longer accept a biblical worldview, especially regarding sexuality. Dr. Edward E. Moody Jr. has written a new book called Ministering in a Changing Sexual Landscape, a guide to helping those with sexual issues. For Vocal Point, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Moody, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you. Thanks so much, Jerry.
So what prompted this book?
Well, so many questions about this issue. I've written a book called Surviving Culture, and people ask specifically about, well, how do we deal with issues like homosexual marriage and this shifting landscape as far as sexuality goes? And I just sensed it was time to go ahead and write it, to try to give folks some guidance to the kinds of things we should say, the things we shouldn't say, and also as a way of kind of going on the offense, trying to help people that were engaged in sexual sin, as I would put it, and try to help them see what the Lord really had for them and how their lives could truly be different.
Now, you're a pastor and a professor. And where are you a professor?
I'm a professor at a state university. It's North Carolina Central University, actually in Durham, North Carolina.
Okay. And as a pastor, that's interesting. I mean, we're getting to the point now lately where academia is very anti-church. So I'm glad you're in a state institution like that. That's great.
Yes, and the folks I work with are they're open. Now, and some of our sister institutions might not feel the same way, and there's probably folks that, there's definitely a lot of folks that disagree, but that's kind of one of the things I've tried to instill in people that I work with, that it's important that we be able to go into the culture, and that's the only way we can really have a true impact upon it.
Hmm. All right. So is the church out of step these days when it comes to, understanding of sexuality?
I think some of them are. There seem to be a lot of churches that are adopting what's happening. They are leaving what we believe for some 2,000 plus years as Orthodox Christians. And so you see some churches sliding away in that direction. I think you see some other churches that would believe, as I do, that these kinds of behaviors are wrong, they're sexual sin, and I sense a lot of them just don't quite know what to do. We think about what we can do politically, we think about things we might do from a legal standpoint, and that's not worked so much as of what's happened lately, as you think of the Supreme Court and so forth. And I think sometimes we're forgetting there is ministry available to us. And that's really what we as churches and we as individual Christians need to be thinking about, and what we need to be doing at this particular point in our nation's history, I would say, or this time.
Now, you have a chapter or a section in your book, Think Like a Scientist. What do you mean by that?
Well, you probably know, and I'm sure many of your listeners do, about Robert Spitzer, who used to be called the father of American psychiatry, and he got into a lot of trouble a couple of years ago when he published an article about how people could move from a homosexual to a heterosexual orientation. And it's kind of interesting. This is the guy that really led taking homosexuality out of the DSM as a diagnosis. So it tells you anyone can really get into trouble. So what happened was for about 9 years, people berated him, and finally he came out and said, well, you know, I apologize, the study was misrepresented, and I shouldn't have published it. Well, that sends a message to any scientist that if you want to publish on this particular area, don't. You know, you won't get tenure, or you could lose your career, and so what it means is folks that are normal everyday Christians have got to start thinking for themselves about science. So when they hear about a study, they need to go back and say, well, wonder who was in that sample. I wonder if that study was actually replicated. I wonder what they actually found. And then based on the findings that they're reporting there, what would that actually mean? And so I'll give an example. There's a fellow named Simon LeVay. And he's published a lot in the area about sexuality, and he talks, for example, about how homosexual brains are different from heterosexual brains. And so you can kind of go back and you can look at the sample, and he got folks from the San Francisco Bay Area when AIDS was really harming a lot of people in the homosexual community. But as you look at his sample, there's folks that are homosexual and folks he had also classified as heterosexual, both dying of AIDS, and it's hard to tell if he was really accurate in choosing those out, you know, saying this is a homosexual and this is a heterosexual. He really didn't have a way of knowing that when he's comparing their brains. So you're looking at that and you're saying, is this a sample I can really trust? Is this actual, you know, science that I can really say, okay, well, brains of homosexuals are different from heterosexuals? And so that's what I mean. We want Christians thinking that way. But we also want them to think, okay, let's just say that what LaVey found was correct. Let's say that the brains in some way were different.
Was it causal or was it correlative?
Exactly. And Simon LaVey himself says that. So when you go and you look at his research, he'll say, okay, I found this difference, but I'm telling you, I don't know if it was the behavior that caused the brain to be different or if the brain was different and that caused the behavior. And so, and actually, when you really look at it, a lot of scientists will tell you things like that in their data. That just doesn't get found out in the media. But I also stress to folks, okay, let's say that the brains were different. Is there anything that would indicate anything the scripture that would indicate that's a possibility? And so you do know in Romans chapter 1, he talks about when you engage in certain behaviors, and he's talking about 18 on about sexual behaviors. What can happen is the Lord, in some versions, he uses the reprobate mind, turns them over to a reprobate mind, and to do those things which were unseemly. So you do know, as you look at scriptures, that it tells us sexual immorality does something to the body. You know, Paul talks about that a lot. Romans 1 talks about that a lot. And so that can be a reason for why some people may look different, some people may act different. If we continue down a certain road, some might, you know, in the old days we've called like feeding the flesh versus feeding the spirit. It does change you. You know, it changes, it actually changes you down to the core of your body. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at when I talk about that, is just come back and say, okay, who's in the sample and what exactly did they find? Was it replicated? And what does the scripture say about this particular issue? And I think we've got to get really good at thinking like scientists and actually being kind of scientific ourselves, to look at why things may be the way they actually are.
So what do you say then, Dr. Moody, if somebody says, are gays born that way? What is your answer?
And my thing is, I try to talk about it like this. We're all born with a fleshly nature. We all have a sinful nature. And so there are some people that are born with a predisposition toward abusing alcohol, some with a problem with anger, some with a problem with depression. And so I don't know. The research that I've looked at does not prove to me that there's a gay gene, so to speak. But I do know that when the fall happened, when sin entered this world, a lot of things changed. And I know that you can look at people's genes and you can see some have the gene for depression, some have the gene for Alzheimer's. And I also see that we don't just assume we've got to be that way. Everybody knows about Angelina Jolie and the steps she took to try to make sure she doesn't get cancer. And a lot of folks may have the genetic marker for Alzheimer's, and they're trying to learn other languages or working on puzzles every day. So we know that maybe somebody might be genetically predisposed, or they may have a predisposition in a particular area. We know from other data they don't have to be that way. Now, I'll give you one example. There's a professor over at Duke University here that has studied depression, and he's tried to identify the gene that would lead someone to be depressed, and he's probably found it. But what he says is, looking at the data, the people that have a genetic marker for depression are not always depressed.
Hmm.
And he'll talk about that as like life choices, and one of those actually would be religion and faith and so forth. And so we see a lot of examples where people may be genetically pointed in a certain direction, but they don't have to go in that direction. They don't have to be that way. You won't probably hear that in the media, but we're doing all kinds of things if we're genetically predisposed for alcoholism or anger or whatever to push back. And what we do see is when people do push back, so to speak, it tends to go kind of well for them, you know.
Yeah, very interesting. Comment about millennials and their understanding about sex, and especially the biblical worldview. I mean, it seems like that's an area where we're really losing a lot of young people today. They just don't understand that God's way is the best way for everybody, including them.
So true, so true. Well, that was that's kind of that surviving culture piece. And so, first off, all parents need to get a handle on this kind of thing, you know, and almost look at developing a culture of their own. You know, you know what can be done in the scripture. That's the kind of thing that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah's parents did. They trained those fellas so they could be in a culture and they could survive it and actually impact it. So one of the things I think we need to do is hit parents hard on work on your kids, help them to get in a culture, survive it, and influence it. But then we've got these millennials. I think one of the things you've got to understand is they think differently. They've been socialized differently. It's because of what they've seen in the media. It's because of what everyone sees and thinks around them. And I think we're going to have to just be real kind of slow with them and very kind with them and help them see what is the impact, you know, what is the result of going down certain roads, you know, especially like with sexual sin. I think they may see it in areas like greed. They actually may do a better job there than we do in some other areas. And I think we just have to start trying to teach them and help them to see what the truth is. And in some ways, we probably need to come at them in a soft manner, you know, to be able to give them some answers to things they're wondering about, you know, like why do people have same-sex attraction and why is it that someone could ask to be forgiven of a behavior and not to be tempted in that direction and still be that way. I think we've got to give them answers like that. And then even prepare the ones that do see as we see things, and try to prepare them to help reach out to the folks in their community who are entangled in sexual sin. I think a lot of millennials they don't feel like they've been helped by the church. They might have brought someone to church and trying to find some help for that person and then been embarrassed by what happened there. And some of them, I fear, don't think the church is a resource for them to help them help other people entangled in sexual sin.
You know, the interesting thing, just stepping back and looking at the big picture here, the interesting thing about all of life, including sexuality, is the fact this is my Father's world.
Mm-hmm.
And God has instilled certain laws, even in the spiritual realm. And so you reap what you sow. And so
right,
following what God has said, marriage is for one man, one woman, and that's what sexuality should be reserved for. That leads to the greatest amount of happiness for those who obey. People don't realize that, and then their lives become vitiated, and you know they develop all kinds of problems because they don't follow God's way. How about a concluding thought on it's best to follow God's way?
Well, I think you just nailed it right there with what you said. And I think as we think about like the exiles, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and those folks.
You mean Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego?
That's right.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah, I know those names better. Yeah.
Names, you know? So I think about the names their parents gave them.
Right,
but,
right.
But as you look at, they're heading off to Babylon, and remember what Jeremiah said. He said, you go and you build houses, you build families, You work.
We're almost out of time. Yeah, huh?
Yeah, and you impact your community. And so I think that's what we're trying to do is go into our community, have an impact upon it by building families, and I think it'll draw people to us, and it'll help us to help them in the long run.
Dr. Edward Moody, Jr., Ministering in a Changing Sexual Landscape. The website is survivingculture.com. Thanks so much for being with us. God bless you.
Thank you.